The Frosted Deer by Sophie Isles. On Beta 12, Bernice are duelled with convicts in deep space. From deep inside a remote Tuktunian moon, she had single-handedly saved a teenage tribe from an eldritch scientist who devoured their ancestral histories. And once upon a time in ancient Rome, she'd learned to play the lyre, run away from three different slavers, and poisoned a counsellor before it was even tea time. Professor Bernice Summerfield knew that some of her adventures were special. Sometimes she had her doubts. Sometimes it felt like a thankless task. And sometimes there were storage cupboards.
"This is all your fault!"
Bernice and Braxiatel had been tied up with ropes and bound together on wooden chairs. A bulb swung above them, occasionally shedding light.
"I beg to differ, Bernice."
Whilst she grappled with their ties, Braxiatel remained indifferent, processing their situation with an air of superiority.
"I wasn't the one who spat in the custom clerk's eye when he accused you, to say nothing of your paperwork, of falsehood."
"Your paperwork," she growled back. "Besides, he had it coming."
Bernice had been in worse scrapes than this. Still, it was no less annoying. She twisted her wrists.
"Why are you so relaxed? We've not got the time to wait. They'll be here to take us into a high-security cell soon. You're the one who wanted to see the deer so badly."
Braxiatel shushed her.
"Not yet. Look."
The pair froze as the general noise and movement outside the door stopped. The light from under the door faded to black with a flick of a distant switch. Braxiatel finally relaxed his shoulders, and the ropes around them fell away. The pair still had their hands tied, but at least they weren't bound to the chairs anymore.
"You could have told me."
"Couldn't you figure it out for yourself?" Brax's voice drawled with ease. "I didn't wish to let on to our idiotic captors that we were cleverer than we may seem. Of course, you did make that easier for me."
Bernice muttered under her breath before she focused her eyes in the dark. On the side of the metal shelving was a loose metal bracket. She used the bracket's pointed edge to cut at the ropes with a satisfied smirk.
"Oh, let's get these ties off."
It took some manoeuvring. Braxiatel relinquished his bonds first, and he then cut easily through Bernice's ropes. Time to get on with the task at hand. Outside the door were office desks in parallel rows and chairs to match. They'd been interrogated here before being thrown into that makeshift cell. Bernice's nose itched at the lingering smell of air freshener. The clock above them read early evening. She ran a tired hand through her hair. They'd been stuck in the cupboard for almost 2 hours. They found the exit with ease. As they left the dingy office room through the sliding doors, they were soaked in the bright sunlight of Tylan Sec's spaceport. Metals twisted together to form sleek air tunnels and skyways. Glass allowed for violet and pink skies to shine through as the planet's day turned to dawn. Inside, the pair were dwarfed by a brightly lit skyway corridor, double the size of most roads Bernice had seen. Its partly translucent walls curved into the dome-like ceiling. In front of them stood parking spaces for vehicles along the other sleek white wall. It was truly a technological wonder.
"The Starliner leaves in 40 minutes, Brax read his timepiece. "Suggestions?"
Two people appeared on the path behind them. The first was a man whose broad shoulders were squeezed into a dark uniform with a thin white stripe running up the arm. Wispy hair revealed more of his scalp than he probably knew. Next to him stood the most miserable of the lanky customs officers that Bernice had met earlier that day. Though he was covered with leopard spots, Bernice's eyes were drawn to his bulbous nose. A long finger pointed at them in horror.
"Here they are, Chief," the lanky man cried out. "They're out of their ropes."
Oh, that's not good. Bernice raised a hand and waved in awkward greeting before pulling on Brax's arm.
"Come on."
She raced towards the rental hoverbikes parked ahead of them, keeping Brax's arm tight in her grip. He could see where they were headed and raised an eyebrow at the bulky machines with side saddle pilot seats and sidecars for passengers,
I hope you're joking. She wasn't. No keys required. A big red button and a kick was all that the hoverbike needed to take off. Unlike its fellow bikes, theirs was a rusty yellow and covered in scratches and dents. Bernice couldn't resist an underdog. Braxiatel sat stiff in the sidecar, holding tight to the seatbelt.
"Do you even know where you're going?" he shouted as they raced down the large gallery.
In front of them, tourists gasped and scrambled out of the way, pulling their friends and pets to one side. Children stared, open-mouthed. Some people yelled whilst others dropped their beverages. The hoverbike continued to flee through the skywalk.
"Of course! Loading Bay Alpha Sec, just like on the paperwork!"
"I thought you didn't trust my paperwork."
From behind them came a whirring of sirens. Bernice twisted about to see that there were now three enforcement bikes of a similar but more modern design on their tail. No scratches, no dents, and painted a much more pleasing white. She saw Brax looking at them too, with an almost wistful look. No doubt he would have preferred to ride with them.
"Hold on, Brax," Bernice told him with glee.
She twisted the accelerator and the engine roared delightedly under them. They sped on recklessly past the spaceport visitors. The skyway broke off into different avenues, each skywalk as wide and foreboding as the last. Each one would lead them to the central loading station where the biggest starliners could be boarded. Through the glass windows, the rocky formations and the setting sun were a reminder that time was running out. Each minute was precious, and the bikes behind them weren't getting any slower. Bernice picked the middle tunnel. Bad choice. A long, sluggish trolley full of passengers blocked their way. It seemed to have been trying to reverse in the skywalk and somehow got stuck. Bernice forced the brake of the bike. Impossibly, the brake shuddered and didn't react. Bernice let the swear words roll as she pressed harder and harder on the brake, her foot against the metal in full force. A sudden, violent shudder roared up the brake. Bernice felt her stomach fall away as their hoverbike screeched. They twisted to a halt, so close to the trolley that Bernice could reach out and touch it. Too close. The engine fizzled out beneath her. Bernice looked down at the hoverbike and pounded the start button. Nothing. Not even a hum. She could also hear an echo of sirens in the distance. That didn't bode well either. Beside her, Braxiatel started to speak again.
"If you haven't noticed, they're almost on us."
"You don't think I can hear them?"
Bernice snapped as she continued pressing the start button and checking for any loose wires.
"Well, I rather hope your plan isn't that we'll just sit here. We haven't the time."
The sirens howled closer this time. Bernice kicked the bike with a cry and pressed the start button one last time. The startup hummed to life. Except the hum was too loud, and getting louder. She could feel the vibrations. Braxiatel juddered in his seat. The information circuits blazed whiter than ever. Bernice had turned on the bike, but she'd tried to start it too many times, and a power surge was building beneath them. Bernice swore again, then a lot more times.
"Hold tight, Brax!"
The bike launched itself towards the wall, blasting all its power to the edge of the corridor. Bernice held her ground as at the wall's edge twisted the handlebars. Now the bike slid up onto the wall. They flew over the disrupted trolley. Below them, passengers saw them soar past. Some laughed, others pointed. They clattered back to the main floor with a hum of the engine. Their pursuers hadn't followed. Perhaps they had bigger fish to fry. Bernice let go of the breath she hadn't realised she'd been holding.
"Oh, that was a close one."
Brax straightened his tie.
"You could say that."
They pulled up in the loading bay, where a large Starliner ship was getting ready to depart, Tylan Sec for Tylan Prime. They abandoned the bike and took off at a sprint towards the check-in desk. There were seats in rows and a large glass window with large gatherings of passengers. The crowds were thick and heavy and, as with any sort of spaceport, constant chatter became background garble. Through the glass they could see the vicious-looking asteroid belt, and between it, in the far-off distance of sky and mist, the splattering of stars, which were always visible no matter what time of day.
"Boarding is no longer open,"
Brax remarked, glancing at the display monitor.
"Well, even if it was, we don't have the paperwork anymore, do we?"
Bernice said. "We'll have to find another way on board." Brax fixed her with a stern look.
"Or I could go and talk to the captain," he said. "I'm a respectable collector, not a criminal. What would be the point of finding the deer if we were immediately arrested afterwards?"
Bernice tilted her head, hands on hips.
"And what if our pursuers are able to figure out it's you on the ship?
What then?"
"Do you doubt my abilities of persuasion?"
"I do. If it's anything like today's paperwork, I'd wager even you can't get a room."
Brax bristled. He straightened his tie again. "Must you turn this into a game?"
"Why not? If you're so sure of your credentials." With a smirk, Bernice darted off into the crowd. "I'll find you a room later," she called behind her.
Bernice observed the people around her as she formed a plan. There were passengers waiting to board starliners and off-world spaceships lounging in chairs. Some children played as their parents read the news or idled away the time. Some of the others in the room were obviously staff. She watched as a lumbering crew member limped away from the main crowd towards the back of the hall. As he approached the wall, it slid out of place, revealing another door.
"That's the sort of thing," Bernice thought triumphantly, darting after him.
Before the door could shut, she put out her hand. It remained open for her.
"Success." The professor straightened her shirt and followed him in, grinning to herself.
She kept her distance from the crew member, but walked with determination. No one would think she didn't belong there if she did that. She stalked underneath a closed chrome ceiling. Glass walls showcased the spaceport beyond. This hallway was compact, with no room to squeeze past. She kept a good distance behind the man she followed, who was heading towards the starliner. Bernice kept her head straight and hands at ease by her side as she formulated a few plans. At the end of the corridor was a room with simple furnishings, seats and lockers. A few staff members sat reading their communication pads, all wearing sky blue uniforms and caps. Some were humanoid, some less so. One had thick, sludge-like arms that he was using to prepare himself a drink at the small kitchenette. A blue jacket and cap hung on a hook in the corner. It was a little creased, and a grease mark stained the collar. Bernice grimaced as she slid it on. Frankly, it smelt a little off. She rolled up the sleeves of the jacket so the extra length wasn't too noticeable, and hoped it would be enough to get her through to the starliner without any awkward questions. The creature making coffee looked up as she passed him. She tilted her new staff cap. He tilted his. He seemed more interested in the dark mess inside his mug.
"Happy fall," he grunted. "Enjoy the festival. Remember, you're supposed to have fun too. This only comes round once a lifetime."
"I will. Thank you," Bernice said quickly and rushed out of the back door.
Open air welcomed the professor, and her breath caught in her lungs. The atmosphere remained heavy as she headed out across the hover pad towards the group of starliner staff. One of the pilots waved at her.
"Hurry up!"
Bernice nodded and took a sprint towards them, the chill around her arms and legs making her shiver. She joined the sea of blue with ease. Some looked tired. Others chatted amicably. One of the chattier ones nudged her arm.
"Isn't this exciting?" she said.
"Yes, it is," Bernice replied flatly, then remembered she was supposed to be joining in. She forced a smile.
"Which bit in particular?" she asked.
"I've never been on a starliner during the fall and festival ceremony." "Oh, right."
"Of course." Bernice had no idea what the young lady was talking about. "What's the Fallen Festival? Is it to do with the Earth season of autumn?"
"Fall? Oh, no. Oh, that's an easy mistake to make, I suppose, seeing as we're Earth descendants. It's about the split of our planet."
She paused.
"Are you new to Tylon, then?"
Bernice laughed.
"Very. You might have to fill me in."
As Bernice sharpened up on planetary history, Brax was using his own methods of gaining access to the ship. It had only taken one flash of his credentials and a check of his records.
As you can see, it would be most unfortunate if you didn't let me on board, he said smoothly to the blue-suited official.
Oh, of course, Mr. Braxiatel, we'd be honoured to have you on the ship. I can secure you lodgings.
That would do nicely. A shining silver bracelet was placed on his wrist. Its purple LED glowed intermittently. He was given instructions to proceed down a small walkway. Once there, he would enter a small shuttle ship that would take him to join the Starliner. The shuttlecraft wasn't too compact. Brax joined the last of the waiting passengers as they manoeuvred into their secured seats. Some were carrying pets. Or partners. With some races, it wasn't obvious. Brax was surprised to see two children who appeared to be travelling on their own. Both of them had green and pink hair, the girls tied in an elegant plait, and the boys sitting just past his ears. He wondered where their parents were.
Do you have any bags?
Asked the stewardess, cutting off his thoughts. I'm fine, thank you.
Anything you require can be purchased on the ship, and don't forget to check in your quarters for the list of events going on. This special journey will be commemorating the Faunin Festival and the Frosted Deer.
That caught his attention. Is that so? Brax said. I've heard rumours about the splendour of the deer.
Oh, we've all heard those rumours, the stewardess said with a smile. I've heard that it has special healing qualities and that it's only visible to those who have hope in their hearts.
Yes, that's the sort of thing, said Brax. Anything else?
It all started 228 cycles ago, recited the stewardess. Our planet was nearly torn in half during the Blood War. We thought we'd lost everything, but our leaders came together in that tough time to keep our planet together, physically and mentally. The Frosted Deer belonged to one of the lost souls during the fall, and now it's a symbol of peace for us, just as it once was on Sol 3 so many centuries ago.
Yes, yes, but is this rumour true, that no one has seen the Frosted Deer since this time?
Why, yes, sir. It is the best-kept secret on Tylan. We know that it travels between the halves every 57 cycles, and we're never sure which half of the planet has it. It's a form of trust, you see?
How interesting, Brax replied, as though bored. The shuttle stopped, hovering to give access to the Starliner from a metal walkway that slid out from the entrance. Brax was the last to leave.
I'll get one of the porters to show you to the suite and the passenger quarters, sir, said a staff member with a tired expression.
It wasn't clear if he'd had trouble sleeping or this was a permanent feature in his face. He made a note of Braxiatel's purple LED bracelet.
You'll want to freshen up before the entertainment begins.
Brax eyed the staff member in his crumpled blue uniform and pressed his lips thinly together.
Excellent advice. Thank you.
In the staff shuttle, Bernice was listening to her new colleague and learning a great deal in the process.
I had no idea that Tylan used to be one planet, Bernice said.
And now it's Prime and Sec, two halves of a shattered planet held together by artificial gravity wells.
It's fascinating.
Before the staff member could reply, the shuttle landed on the Starliner and the crowded staff were ushered out. No one had been able to ask Bernice anything about who she was or where she had come from, not with a chatty lady at her side. As she stepped away, Bernice let out a sigh of relief. Smiling, she turned to her new friend.
Thanks for filling me in. I'm afraid, though, I might have another favour or two to ask. Can you help me find a passenger, or get a message to them?
Brax was trying to enjoy a glass of wine when the message came through. He was sitting on a reclining sofa, trying to ignore the decor that had been specially picked out for the elite passengers. Considering the cost of a ticket, he wasn't impressed with the wine or the room. One was too acidic, the other too dark. Both served their purpose, at least. A ringing sound came from a small communication device next to the sofa. He picked it up. Braxiatel speaking? Bernice's voice groaned through the speaker.
I was half hoping you wouldn't make it on board. I stand corrected.
How'd you get your own elite suite?
I'm a very persuasive man. You're also on board, I trust. I got in with the staff, made a friend.
How quaint.
Don't get too cosy. We've got a job to do, then we're heading home. Let's meet on the main observation deck. They arranged a time. Brax put down the receiver and slid back into the sofa, sipping again at his wine. The observation deck faced the front of the Starliner, a large room with a domed ceiling that revealed the space beyond them. While it looked like glass, the transparent shining material was stronger than most substances found in the galaxy, and one of the most expensive. It protected its passengers and allowed them to view the universe around them. Bernice found Brax easily. His thin, suited frame reclined with ease in one of the many deck chairs. His face was completely hidden by a communication pad.
That colour rather suits you, he commented without looking up.
If you say so, Bernice said, smoothing down her staff uniform and taking a seat. What have you found out? Brax put down his reading material and gave Bernice a grin that she wasn't sure she liked.
That my informant was right. This is the biggest Starliner departing from Tylan Sec to Tylan Prime this year, and it is the 57th cycle of the Fallen Festival. It all fits our information. The Frosted Deer must be on board.
Well then, you're in luck. I have a staff skeleton ID pass. This lot's a bit too trustworthy, if you ask me.
And you know the location of the Loyalist suite?
I do. My new friend told me it's on the upper passenger deck. With the festival's opening ceremony tonight, we'll have the perfect cover. Brax smiled. If you could call it a smile.
Well done, Benny.
Perhaps dragging you away from another dig wasn't such a bad idea after all. I can finally catalogue the Frosted Deer for the collection. It's been on my to-see list for quite some time.
Only because you know no one's allowed to see it, Bernice said, rolling her eyes.
Then she caught Brax's expression.
But the locals certainly make it sound impressive, she added quickly.
Indeed. I'm suspecting it has a powerful psychic field. Earth descendants having that technology wouldn't be unheard of, Brax agreed. But to find something powerful enough to produce such effective results on a war-torn planet is astonishing. Well, we'll have our answers soon enough.
The pair walked in quick succession down one of the passenger corridors. Brax had a bounce in his walk that made Bernice nervous. The skeleton pass felt heavy in her jacket pocket. The Loyalist's suite wasn't in the same area as Brax's luxurious quarters. Instead, it was on the second floor, a quiet, unassuming corridor compared to some of the others. The longer they walked, the more Brax frowned.
Are you quite sure this is the place? Positive.
Bernice found the door number, 2412. Flashing the ID pass on the door switch, it slid open with ease. Two young children with brightly coloured hair glowered at the intruders. The boy clutched a box to his chest, while the girl stayed close beside him.
Who are you?
Demanded the girl, giving them a suspicious look.
I think we can ask you the same question. Brax's towering height cast a shadow over them. His voice was dark and curt.
The ransacked room had a jumble of clothes and items scattered all over the place.
What have you been doing in here?
Nothing, yelled the little boy indignantly. This is our room.
Then why is it such a mess? Bernie said to them, her tone softer than her employer's. She gave Brax a frown.
I thought I lost something,
the boy told them, looking pale.
But we have it now, so we can go back to watch the festival.
Brax's hands were clenched at his sides. He began to explore the room, ignoring the children. Bernice gave them an awkward smile, an attempt at first contact.
Is this what you were looking for? Can I see?
The boy held it tighter. The girl brought her brother closer.
No, my brother and I...
You're twins?
It was the closest Brax had come to smiling.
He glanced at Bernice.
She's only doing her job. You needn't worry about her.
His voice placating and smooth. Bernice shot daggers at her employer before she gently lowered herself to their level. Kids prefer that, right?
He makes it sound boring. But it's not. My job is to find special objects and study them when they've been lost or forgotten. I take care of them.
The girl's grip on her brother relaxed slightly. Her eyes were large and glossy.
Really?
She asked. Really? That's what you're doing too, isn't it? Taking care of a special object?
Do get on with it, Professor Summerfield, Brax fumed.
He overturned quilts and pillows. It was obvious to Bernice that the stiffness in her employer's voice would increase as the seconds ticked along.
Can I? Bernice asked.
The boy looked at his sister. She finally nodded, and the boy gently pressed the box about the size of Bernice's palm into her hands. Carefully, she moved to the table to study it. A switch on the wall illuminated it. The box shone with a black and silver coating and had embossed black edges. On its lid was a small groove to open the box. Bernice carefully moved her thumb towards the groove.
Oh, don't do that,
the little girl said.
You're not supposed to open it.
And who told you that?
Brax asked. Bernice could have sworn she saw his face twitch with impatience.
Our grandfather said that we mustn't look inside, and that's what he had been told by his grandmother and their grandfather before her. They travelled with it every fall across the halves, just like we're doing now.
Bernice frowned. The box didn't look that old. Unfortunately, Tylans were not a people whose history she knew well. If Brax hadn't just pulled it from her dig without warning, she could have had time to research them properly. Brax shoved Bernice to one side. The children stiffened as he took control. He pressed his thumb into the groove, and as he did so, there was a gentle click as the box lid slid away. Bernice reached inside and took out the contents. The artifact fitted easily into her palm. The light gave it a soft shine. Bernice recognized it immediately. The design of the translucent shape was a reindeer. Wasn't that a symbol of Christmas on Earth? On its back, tied elegantly in a small knot, was a hoop of golden string. The statue was lighter than she'd expected. It sat delicately in her hands. It wasn't fragile like china or glass, but it seemed hollow. The children gasped in awe and averted their eyes. Brax reacted differently.
It's plastic! It's an ornament! A fake ornament at that! It's not even glass! It's an item that's cheap and nasty, dispensable. It's not even unique. I've paid a fortune to be on this ship. I've been chased and arrested, and for what?
Brax left the room. Had the door had hinges, Bernice was sure he'd have slammed the door behind him. She closed her eyes as she reverently lowered the deer back into the box. The children were staring at her with pale faces. Of course, they'd never opened it. So a simple Christmas ornament was the only thing that had survived the cataclysm, Bernice thought. She could picture it, the humans arriving on this planet and putting up Christmas trees in the coldest seasons, just like their ancestors did. Then the war tore the planet in two. Literally. And in one household, an ornamental reindeer clutched in a child's hands was all that was left of their home. Already a representation of the time of giving and hope and goodwill, over time it came to mean so much more for this planet. Sometimes an idea is stronger than an artifact of power and glory, Bernice thought. Sometimes, just sometimes, there are frosted deer. The little boy called her back from her thoughts. He tugged at her jacket.
But the deer is special,
he babbled, his eyes wider than ever.
That man is wrong. It's so special.
I know. I do really. Bernice struggled to form the sentence in a diplomatic way. My friend is just angry he didn't get what he wanted. But the deer is more important than him. The little boy nodded, and his sister followed suit.
Our grandfather, he said there was nothing more special than this deer in all of the universe.
And I believe him, Bernice said. Because this deer means a lot to everyone on your world, doesn't it? Which means you've got to keep taking care of it. Don't listen to anyone who tells you anything different. She secured the lid back on the box and with just as much care as she had before. With a quiet smile, she placed it in his hands. I hope you trust me, she said. The little boy smiled, glassy-eyed, as he squeezed the box tightly. His eyes didn't leave hers.
Of course. Your job is to take care of special things, just like us.
That's right, said Bernice. My job is kind of
top secret, too. So it's probably best you don't tell anyone I was here.
The boy and girl both nodded solemnly.
Great, said Bernice. You're doing an excellent job.
And he went to find Brax and a large glass of red wine.